Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Okay, let's dive right in. Imagine this. You're 21, you get told you have maybe 2 years left to live, and then you somehow defy all of that for 50 years. And not just live, but completely change how we see the universe. That's the incredible life we're exploring today, Stephen Hawking.
It's an absolutely astonishing story. And, you know, we're not just talking about the deep physics, the cosmology, although that's huge. We're really trying to get at the person behind that famous wheelchair, that synthesized voice. And we're using his own words, mostly from his memoir, My Brief History. It's less about explaining black holes, surprisingly, and more about explaining him.
Exactly. So our goal here for you listening is to really pull out the key insights from Hawking's journey, both personal and scientific. How did facing such enormous adversity actually, well, fuel his thinking? What can we learn from that unbelievable resilience, that just relentless curiosity? Think of this as maybe a shortcut to understanding one of the most amazing minds ever. We'll look at how that awful diagnosis became a catalyst, how love played a huge role, and yeah, even how important humor was for him. So where do we start with someone like Hawking? It's tempting to think, you know, genius is obvious right from the start, but his book paints a really different picture. An eccentric English family after the war, lots of intellectual chat around the dinner table, sounds quite stimulating. But Stephen himself, an average unexceptional student, he says, he even admits his schoolwork was often messy.
Yeah, messy.
He loved taking things apart, clocks, radios, figuring out how they worked. But he also says, pretty bluntly, he wasn't particularly skilled with his hands. What does that tell you about those early days? About maybe how potential sometimes hides?
Well, it really speaks to that idea of latent potential, doesn't it? His environment, I mean, parents from Oxford, valuing knowledge, asking questions that definitely nurtured his mind, even if his notebooks were messy. He was building things in his head, maybe, not with his hands. And that nickname, Einstein, that his school friends gave him. Maybe it started as a joke, but it turned out to be weirdly prophetic. It shows, I think, that brilliance doesn't always look like top marks early on. It needs the right environment to really catch fire.
That's a great point. He wasn't some kind of, you know, child prodigy solving equations at five. Then he goes to University College, Oxford, 1959 to 62. And here it gets even more interesting. He talks about feeling bored detachment, studying maybe an hour a day, found the physics ridiculously easy.
Ridiculously easy. Imagine.
All right. So to fight off the boredom, what does he do? Joins the college boat club as the coxswain, which is all strategy, right? Brains over brawn. And then comes this key moment, final exams. He needs a first-class degree to get into Cambridge for his PhD. So he tells the examiners, famously, look, if you give me a first, I'm off to Cambridge. Give me a second. I'm staying here at Oxford.
The sheer confidence.
And he just writes, so they gave me a first.
Huh. Just like that. But yeah. that need for a real challenge, that confidence, it really sets the scene. But then things take such a sharp, tragic turn. Cambridge, 1962. Symptoms start. Clumsiness, his speech slurring. He's diagnosed with ALS at 21. And the prognosis is just brutal. 2 years. This is the crux of it, really. How does that, this death sentence, somehow become the start of his most scientifically fertile period? How does it become, in his words, a reason to live?
It's hard to even fathom that shift. He admits he fell into a deep depression. I mean, who wouldn't? Why bother with research if you're running out of time? Mm-hmm. But then two things seem to pull him back. He mentioned seeing a young boy dying of leukemia in the hospital, which gave him some stark perspective.
Yeah.
And then, crucially, meeting Jane Wilde, falling in love. He says it point blank. Their engagement gave me something to live for. That link between his personal life, that human connection, and his scientific drive feels so central. What does the book suggest about that connection?
Oh, it's absolutely the emotional core. Jane's love, her commitment, it was the spark, the hope he needed. It just underlines how even the most abstract scientific pursuits are often deeply fueled by, well, human connection. Love, needing stability, feeling responsible for someone else. These can be incredibly powerful drivers for survival, for achievement. It's a reminder, isn't it, that we don't think great thoughts in some kind of sterile isolation. Life, emotion, relationships, they're all mixed in. His urgency to achieve was absolutely magnified by finding Jane.
Yeah, absolutely. So fired up by this new purpose, this urgency, he just throws himself into research, like with everything he has. This is when he teams up with Roger Penrose, the mathematician. They start applying Penrose's ideas about singularities to the whole universe. And their work basically proves that if Einstein's theory of general relativity is right, the universe must have started from this single point of infinite density, the singularity, which is just mind-bending. a massive boost for Big Bang Theory. And at the same time, he marries Jane in 65, they start a family, have three kids, Robert, Lucy, and Timothy.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Because his mind becomes his refuge, his laboratory. He talks about his scientific work not as this separate thing, but as a mental universe he could totally control, explore, even as his physical body was failing him. It's such a powerful picture of, well, mind over matter. His thoughts were his freedom. He was literally building worlds in there.
Wow. What a way to put it. Okay, let's shift to maybe his most famous scientific idea. Early 70s. He starts thinking about black holes, but mixing in quantum mechanics, the physics of the really tiny stuff. Can you walk us through that eureka moment in 1974, the idea that black holes aren't actually completely black?
Sure. So Hawking's big insight was truly revolutionary. He figured out that right near the edge of a black hole, the event horizon, quantum effects would allow particles to essentially escape. It means black holes aren't these perfect cosmic vacuum cleaners. They should actually emit radiation particles. They glow faintly, and in doing so, they slowly lose mass and eventually should just evaporate. Poof! This is Hawking radiation. And it was huge because it connected general relativity, quantum mechanics, and thermodynamics heat for the first time. It really cemented his place among the giants. But then the question becomes, how do you keep sharing these incredibly complex ideas when you're losing the ability to speak or write?
Yeah, and that became terrifyingly real in 1985. He was at CERN, got severe pneumonia, had to have an emergency tracheotomy, and that was it. His natural voice was gone forever. He talks about the sheer frustration, trying to spell out words just by raising his eyebrows, letter by letter. Imagine the speed of his thoughts trapped like that.
Unimaginable. Just
what?
A devastating blow. Many people would have just stopped there. Couldn't blame them. But then technology offered a lifeline. First, a simple spelling board. Then, crucially, this computer program, the equalizer, and the speech synthesizer. That gave him his voice, that instantly recognizable robotic voice. And he even joked about keeping the original American accent because, well, it became his trademark. It wasn't just about coping. It was about adapting, innovating, finding a new way to be Stephen Hawking. It perfectly illustrates his own, quote, intelligence is the ability to adapt to change. He embodied it.
It's just incredible resilience. And this adaptation, finding his new voice, coincided with another huge shift. He was facing serious medical bills, mounting costs. So he decided, right, I need to write a popular science book, something for everyone. And the result was, of course, A Brief History of Time, which wasn't just a bestseller. It was a global phenomenon. It made him a household name way beyond academia.
Oh, absolutely. That book changed everything for public science communication. It proved his belief that science is a universal human heritage, that scientists should talk to the public, and it showed people were hungry for it. It inspired countless people, young and old, to think about the universe. His gift was making the incredibly complex feel accessible without dumbing it down. He opened up cosmology for millions.
He really did. So let's dig a bit deeper into his sort of core philosophy, what really drove him through all of this. The book hammers home themes like the triumph of mind over matter, the indomitable power of purpose and hope, and his lifelong curiosity is the engine of existence. Mm-hmm. How did those all weave together for him, do you think?
Well, they weren't just nice ideas, were they? They were his survival kit, his psychological bedrock. His mind genuinely became his sanctuary, his freedom. That terrible ALS diagnosis, it forced focus. It intensified his drive. Remember his quote, "My expectations were reduced to zero when I was 21. Everything since then has been a bonus." That mindset changes everything. Suddenly, every day, every discovery is a gift, not an entitlement. And that curiosity, it wasn't just a personality trait, it was his engine. Always asking why, pushing boundaries, even when his physical world was shrinking, he found infinity inside his own head.
And yet, amidst all this profound struggle and deep thought, the book is shot through with his humor, that dry, self-deprecating wit. He jokes about being lazy at Oxford, about how weird his fame felt, even about his synthesized voice. But he's also incredibly honest about the toll his illness took on Jane, on his family. He doesn't shy away from the cost.
No, he doesn't. And that humor, it was vital. It wasn't just charm. It was a coping mechanism, a way to connect. It stopped people from just seeing the disability, the tragedy. It let them see him, the brilliant, funny guy underneath. And his honesty about the interdependence of personal and professional life is so important. He connects the dots. The diagnosis fueled the urgency, the family stability, initially at least, allowed the focus, the need for money, led to the book. It shows that even the loftiest science happens within the context of real, messy human lives. None of us are just brains in jars.
So true. Okay, let's bring it back to you, the listener. What can we take away from this incredible life? One big theme is redefining personal limitations. How might someone apply that idea in their own life, even if their challenges are, you know, less extreme?
Well, Hawking's life teaches us that limitations, physical, financial, whatever they are, they don't have to be the final word on our potential. It's about shifting focus. What can you do? Where do your strengths lie? Put your energy there. Don't just stare at the closed door. Look for the open window. Or maybe even build a new door. Find your own universe to explore, whatever that means for you. See challenges less as dead ends and more as puzzles needing creative solutions. It's about adapting, finding that alternative path.
His life really is the ultimate example of adapting, isn't it? Rather than just breaking. And what about that relentless curiosity? How do we foster that in ourselves?
I think the book shows that having a powerful why is key to enduring hardship. For him, it was family cosmology. So you can apply that by getting really clear on your own core motivations, what truly drives you. And alongside that, just keep asking questions. Stay curious. In your job, in your life, why are things the way they are? How do they work? That kind of engagement keeps your mind alive, keeps you growing. For Hawking, that intellectual freedom transcended everything else. That's a lesson for all of us. Freedom can be found in how we think.
And the book makes it so clear how vital his support network was. Jane, obviously. His kids. Mentors like Dennis Ikama, Roger Penrose. And even his success with A Brief History of Time shows the power of clear communication.
Definitely. His reliance on others and their dedication to him underscores how important strong support systems are, both personally and professionally. His story encourages being open about what you need, but also finding ways to contribute back. It's reciprocal. And yes, his skill in making complex physics understandable is a masterclass for anyone in any field. Respect your audience, remove the jargon, share the knowledge. Make it inclusive. It's not just what you know, it's how well you can share it.
Okay, so let's try to wrap up this deep dive into Stephen Hawking's My Brief History. Let's boil it down to three key insights for you to take away.
Right. I think first, the most emotionally powerful insight is this. The human spirit, our capacity for wonder, for determination, it's not limited by our physical bodies. His life is proof. Facing mortality head on can actually be liberating. It frees you from worrying about small stuff, maybe. Makes you see every single day as a bonus, like he said. Not something you're owed.
Yeah, that bonus mindset is huge. Intellectually, I think a key takeaway is just how powerful the pursuit of knowledge is. Seeking understanding, Hawking showed that pure curiosity, that drive to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist, it offers a deep source of meaning, joy even. And that's something accessible to anyone, right? Regardless of circumstance, our minds can be our greatest source of freedom.
Absolutely. And finally, maybe the most universal lesson is about resilience, about adapting. Cultivating that psychological strength, the ability to face change, ideally with optimism and, yes, with humor. Hawking showed true intelligence isn't just about brain power. It's about adapting when things go wrong, finding the funny side, focusing on what's still possible. It's accepting limits, sure, but always looking for creative workarounds and never, ever losing hope.
So here's a final thought to leave you with. Stephen Hawking's life kind of flips the script, doesn't it? What if the things we see as limitations aren't just obstacles? What if they're actually unique perspectives, lenses that let us see possibilities, ask questions others might miss? What universe, big or small, are you ready to explore with that renewed sense of purpose, curiosity, and resilience? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into My Brief History by Stephen Hawking. We hope this exploration has given you a fresh perspective and some powerful insights to carry into your own journey. Until next time, keep looking up at the stars. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.